Good evening. My name is Jan Turkle, and I'd like to welcome you to the breast augmentation webinar. If you have any questions about any of the contents, feel free to email us at drturkle@turklemd.com, or feel free to call us if that is more convenient at 317-848-0001. And so without further ado, we'll go ahead and get started. The question is often asked, who seeks breast augmentation? And honestly, it's women of all ages. You know, we have seen women in their 70s, and we have certainly seen women in their teens and everything in between. And the reason that women of all ages tend to choose breast augmentation is either a lack of development or diminished volume, either due to weight gains and losses, childbearing, aging, etc. A lot of times people ask, am I too old to do this? And the answer is no. I think as long as your health is good and there's really no reason to not do that, you know, as long as there's no other overriding reason to reconsider. It is the most popular cosmetic procedure year after year. We've seen a 31% increase in the numbers from 2000 to 2015, and to be quite honest, I'm sure that this is probably somewhat of an underreported number, as these numbers are coming from the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, and it's a voluntary thing that they send out and ask practices what their numbers are for the year. And so I'm sure an awful lot of people probably don't respond, and so I'm sure these numbers are quite a bit underreported. The area of incisions are either axillary, inframammary crease, or periareolar, and we'll kind of visit a little bit about where we go and why we do what we do. And then also the consideration of whether you place the implant under the muscle, as the picture on the left shows, or above the muscle, as you see here. Bottom line is they're both very reasonable things to do. The under-the-muscle position is preferred by radiologists because the implant is white on a mammogram and cannot be seen through. So for mammogram purposes, they're going to get views from a couple of different angles to be able to see around the device. If there is a muscle between implant and breast tissue, it allows easier movement of those tissues over the top of the implant and gives better views. Second reason for that is historical, in that when they switched from an above-the-muscle position to under-the-muscle position, they found that they decreased the rate of hardening, or what we call capsular contracture, in half. And third, it's covered by just a little bit more tissue. As you can kind of appreciate in this picture, you've got muscle as well as breast, here just breast only, that maybe there's a little bit more coverage and maybe a little less feelable implant. Considerations going through the process of breast augmentation are obviously, first and foremost, if your health is good and there's no other mitigating circumstance why you shouldn't do it. We do perform these under general anesthetic. You're looking at less than an hour in the OR. You obviously have to come with a driver to get you to and from, and of course an empty stomach for the anesthesia. Trying to figure out size and expectations has been made many, many times more simple with the advent of Vectra, which is a imaging system that allows us to take your photo and try different implants in the photo to make sure that we're getting a result that you would be happy with. Also, symmetry, most of us don't have perfect symmetry, but again, with the Vectra imaging, we can try different implants, etc. A video screen to see if we can create better symmetry with some of the issues that people present with. Sensitivity is normally preserved. It's rare to see a loss of sensation on a permanent basis, but it's certainly a possibility. This should not have any impact at all on breastfeeding. Bleeding with this is a very tiny amount. It's usually a few drops on a sponge, but we always caution everybody to stop anything that thins their blood the 2 weeks pre and the 2 weeks post. So things like aspirin, ibuprofen, Aleve, vitamin E, fish oil, etc., we hold those things. Fortunately, infection is incredibly rare, but we like to keep it that way, and so we ask all of our patients to lather for about 5 minutes in the shower over the chest, breast, and armpit area for about 5 minutes each of the 3 days before surgery with HibiCleanse. That's an antibacterial soap that can be obtained anywhere from a pharmacy. It does not require a prescription, and it is very, very helpful in reducing the risk of infection. The scars, typically those are pretty inconsequential. They're very small, buried stitches, usually fairly short incisions that become pretty inconspicuous over time. Issues related to breast implants. Certainly no man-made part, whether it be a dental crown, a filling, a knee joint replacement, or a breast implant, will necessarily last forever. Implants can certainly rupture or leak. The body can make a dense capsule or a dense scar around it that becomes very firm, and we call that encapsulation. The good news is that if an implant ruptures, you have a lifetime warranty from the manufacturer that they will replace that ruptured device. If an implant develops encapsulation or hardening, the treatment for that is to go in and take out the scar tissue around the implant and remove the implant itself and put a new implant in. If that occurred within 10 years of the original placement of the device, the current manufacturer's warranty states that they would replace the part at no charge. The current manufacturer's warranty for Allergan states that if you have silicone gel implants placed and had a failure in the first 10 years, which is about a 1.5% risk of doing so, they would replace both broken and non-broken device and pay $3,500 of the expenses. After 10 years, they would continue to replace the failed device, but no more financial assistance. Different manufacturers have different spins on this warranty, but I think almost everybody in the United States has some type of a very long-term or lifetime warranty, as does Allergan. Mammograms, as we mentioned before, see the implant as a white semicircle with a halo of breast tissue out around it. And so in order to be able to see what's on the other side, a couple of extra angles or views are required. Implants can certainly in some cases be felt. And again, the less viscous the material is inside the implant, for example, saline, which is water, not very thick and viscous, you're going to feel ripples and wrinkles a lot more clearly than something that's a thicker, more viscous material such as silicone. Very rarely do these cause visible changes, but on some very thin people, especially with the saline device, when they lean over, they can sometimes see kind of pleating or visible lines that can be problematic. You hear a lot about 24-hour recovery, and basically, in a nutshell, it says that, you know, we kind of agree with John Tebbets, who was the originator of this concept. He's a famous plastic surgeon in Dallas, and basically came up with the idea of, you know, how can we get people back to doing things quickly? And I think bottom line is, as a surgeon, if we are cauterizing the vessels very quickly and directly, not letting bleeding to occur and get into the tissues, not dinging the little covering around the ribs called the periosteum that's very rich in nerves and is very uncomfortable, not trying to put implants in that are way larger than what the woman can accommodate, and several other intraoperative issues, we find that most people can bounce back very quickly. The other piece to that is initiating early activity. You know, the more you get up and move and keep those muscles working, they don't have time to get spasmy and painful. So we find that most people within 24 hours can really be up and about and quite active. We don't want anybody getting cardio activity for a couple of weeks so we don't stir up bleeding, and we don't recommend strenuous activity, you know, in terms of pushing or pulling that might cause an implant to want to displace originally. But after 6 weeks, pretty much all activities as usual. We mentioned earlier the 3D or vector imaging. And here's an image where they've actually put the bra top on, but you can see a couple of different views with and without implants. And it does create a very realistic image of what you're going to look like. And then what we typically do then is kind of confirm that by placing sizers in a sports bra to kind of make sure that what you've created on the imaging actually works for you in a mirror as well. And I think you can just see a couple of different examples here of people with different shapes and sizes. And then the thing that's also really neat about the Vectra is it allows you to look at yourself from different perspectives. So, you know, this is looking at the same individual with two different sized implants, and also kind of what she's seeing as she looks down at herself, which is kind of a nice ability. The implant options basically are saline silicone and cohesive gel, which is another form of silicone. Saline's the least expensive. If it breaks, it's pretty easy to tell. Your body absorbs the water and things go flat very quickly. And the biggest problem is if somebody has very limited soft tissue over the top of the implant, it's probably not the most optimal choice because you can perceive the implant and the wrinkles and ridges a lot more obviously. Silicone and cohesive silicone are two forms of silicone implants. The cohesive has been heated and cross-linked a little longer, so it's a little bit more firm. Both give a very natural appearance and feel. The biggest downside is with both of these, the MRI is the best way to determine leakage. Unlike saline, you don't absorb anything, and so typically if a silicone's broken, it's contained within the scar tissue or the capsule around the device and isn't always obvious, even on mammogram necessarily, that we've had a rupture. The MRIs aren't covered by insurance at this point in most cases. They are actually, though, coming down in price, which is nice to see. The more form-stable or cohesive implant has less rippling because it's a firmer device. Typically, you need a little bit bigger incision to get it in, and it's a little more costly. The cost of the implants, salines are right now about $1,100 because it's $900 for the implant, but I would strongly encourage people to buy the $200 warranty, and I'll explain why in a little bit. Silicone and cohesive silicone come with an automatic warranty that you don't have to purchase. The silicones are $1,700 a pair for the device, and the cohesives are $2,700 a pair for the device. This is an example of a saline implant. They've been available since the late 60s. It is a silicone shell filled with salt water, the same as the IV saline given for a lot of medical reasons. And here's an example. And I think, you know, when you look at the before and after pictures with people standing shoulders back upright, I would be hard-pressed to tell you who has saline and who has silicone. The results are all going to be very similar. Again, and these are based on, you know, sizes that patients have requested. And so, again, just lots of different issues. The thing I think you can kind of point out, too, this young lady has a little asymmetry. The right breast sits a little lower than the left. And you see that same thing carried through. That kind of brings the point that augmentation is going to simply make a bigger version of whatever we came in with. So little Mother Nature asymmetries don't necessarily go away unless it's a volume thing where you could put more in one side and less in the other. But if they're shape or position issues, the implants typically don't correct that in and of themselves. This is an example of a silicone gel implant. Looks very similar to saline. It's got the same bag. It's just the stuff inside is a little thicker and more viscous. These came out in 1962. There was a short period of time from 1993 to 2006. The United States Federal Drug Administration limited the use of these devices. During that time frame, if you were here for simply cosmetic augmentation, you got saline. If you were here for other reasons and opted to have silicone, you had to participate in a 5-year study. During that same time frame, every other country in the world continued to use the device. After 13 years of studying these very closely and many, many papers and research projects, the FDA put the implant back on the U.S. market, feeling that it posed no significant risk. The two caveats at that time was they wanted the patients to be 22 years of age or older, and they wanted us to recommend MRI at 3 years and repeat every 2 years thereafter to look for what they call silent rupture, i.e., when a silicone implant breaks and there's no evidence of it. Sometimes an MRI will pick that up. The appeal of the implant is it's very soft and natural. When you handle it, it actually feels kind of like breast tissue or fat. Some examples of silicone augmentation. And again, I think as you recall with the saline, I don't know that you could really say that they look that different. You know, they certainly create a very natural look, but, you know, so do the saline. I think the biggest difference is if you were to feel the breast, you would probably say that this one might fool you a little bit more, because the saline, you can feel the device. With the silicone, you typically don't feel the device quite as strongly. It's a softer, more breast or fat feeling kind of situation. And I think you can appreciate all different sizes and shapes can be achieved. The cohesive gel or gummy bear implant, as depicted here, this was the first one that came to the United States in the early 2000s. It was under study for about 13 years and FDA approved here about 2, 3 years ago. As you know, this one has kind of a fuzzy or textured surface, and it has a narrow top and a wide bottom. The reason it's textured is because you get some ingrowth of the tissues into the texturing, and that helps to kind of keep the top headed to the top and the thicker bottom at the bottom, and they're not turning. They just recently, in the past 2 weeks, have released a new form of cohesive gel implant that is a smooth round device, and so you don't have to have the texturing anymore. These have been in Europe since the 90s, but now are here in the United States as well. And so the examples that you're going to see have been done with the what we call anatomic shaped or narrow at the top, wide at the bottom device, but I think you'll start seeing very soon the cohesive implant in the round smooth form as well. A lot of people referred to it as a gummy bear, kind of with the thought that if you cut the implant, the inside looked like kind of the gummy bear on the inside of that candy. I always tell people kind of think gelatin with the silicone gel and jelly bean, if you will, with the cohesive gel, in that it's just a little bit more cohesive, a little more stiff. The approval, as I mentioned, was given in 2013 for both augmentation and reconstruction in patients 22 years and older. It's a more solid silicone form, and we have treated hundreds of people with this device. Here's some examples. Again, very similar to what you've seen with the other devices. A little narrower at the top, a little wider at the bottom. It gives a very natural look, but to be quite honest, I don't know that I could tell you if you would mix up the slides, which was cohesive and which was regular and which was saline. I think in a room doing an exam, you can certainly pick out the silicone from the saline, but the cohesive from the regular silicone are very, very similar. Again, ideal in a person that has such little body fat in that, you know, there's not much rippling and wrinkling, as these are more form stable. Not to say that she couldn't feel anything, but it's much less so than the more liquid forms of implants that we have. But I think all of these do a pretty nice job of being able to show that, you know, you're going to increase the volume. Some of the little differences carry through. Occasionally, people present for augmentation, but actually the position of the nipple has fallen below the inframammary crease, and therefore putting an implant alone would result in a rather odd-looking configuration. And so what we do in this situation is a breast lift or a mastopexy with the implants. And I think you can appreciate, you know, this young lady, when you look, the nipple is below where her crease is, which if my fingers were up and underneath the breast, would be about where my laser pointer is. And so what we've done is we've raised the nipple up. This is a fairly early picture. The scars are pretty obvious. Those tend to fade and blend over time. I think this one's taken it about 3 months. When they get closer to a year, most of the color starts to fade. This, again, another example of breast lift with implants. It definitely puts some incisions on you that you didn't come here with, but had we have just ignored the position of her breast and put an implant under the muscle, she'd have this fullness up here with the breast hanging off of it, which probably wouldn't have worked so well for her. Again, a lot of ptosis or droop, and with the lift, we were able to reduce the size of the areola and get the nipples back up in the center of the breast where they belong. Again, same kind of idea, and all the different implants certainly can be used with these, with a lift as well. Every once in a while, we have the patient that comes in that had an implant and may have had a failure of the device or may have hardened around the device. may have, over time the tissue stretched and kind of fell off the device. And so occasionally we need to make some adjustments. This is a young lady that developed what we call hardening or capsular contracture. What you can tell is that the breast implant is kind of up high. It looks kind of round. It looks like her breast has kind of fallen off the device. And so what we did in this situation is go in and release and take out the scar tissue and the implant and replace the implant in a more pleasing position. And she really didn't need a lift. She just needed the implant to sit down in the bottom of the breast and give her the look that she needed. This is one where the left side was deflated. That was a saline implant. And so it's been replaced. And I think you can see how that restored that upper pole fullness for her. She had a deflation on the left and ended up with not only a replacement but a breast lift, because as you can tell over time, her implants are up here and her breasts have kind of fallen off the implant. So we were able to lift the breast back up, get the nipple in the right position, and also replace both of her implants. So with that, I will close. Again, if you have any questions, feel free to call us at 317-848-0001 or email us at drturkle@turklemd.com. I thank you very much for your kind attention.